time for perf bites.
What the f*** is perf bites?
The fourth square meal of the day. Don't forget perf bites.
Listen to your perf bites. Listen to your perf bites.
Add nutritional value to your brain.
It's time for perf bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf bites.
Whatever.
Hey, it's time for perf bites once again with your copiously distributed hosts, Howard Chorney, James Pulley, and myself, Mark. How are you guys?
I'm just Ducky, Mark. How are you today?
Ducky, where does that come from? What's the derivation of that?
I'm not quite sure what the derivation of that is.
Ducks?
But
do you have an affinity towards ducks?
Just quacking away, having a wonderful day.
Yes, yes. And James is feeling a little under the weather, so rather than having single malt scotch, he's having some DayQuil.
Yeah, so I'm operating at about a third gear out of six today.
So would that be just another word saying 50%?
Yeah, I'm having a high torque day, but not a high speed one.
Yet. Yes, exactly. So we're gonna have a wonderful discussion today about things. I want to talk all about things, things here, things there, things everywhere. And mostly because there's a lot of hype in the industry. Like the people are saying the next big bubble is this whole internet of things. And so we're going to talk about the performance of things that are connected to the internet of things. The one thing's connected to the other thing. What's this? Knee bones connected to the thigh bone, thigh bones connected to the hip bone.
I feel like there should be a Dr. Seuss book about this.
Maybe we should. Well, oh, that's beautiful.
Oh,
idea.
That would be awesome.
Excellent.
Maybe we can be the three things, thing one, thing two, and thing three.
That's right. Yeah. Lots of things. But before we jump in to all that, all those things, there's a couple of announcements we want to let you guys know. We are going to be, as usual, doing a end of the year show. And so that it will include our awards. Now, in the past, we've done just the sort of person of the year. I think the first one was the Duchess of Cambridge, Princess Kate,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then we gave an award to the CTO of or CIO of Tiger Air for being a genius. But this year, Howard, as you've joined us, we found that we really should expand the award show, and we're going to actually put together the Perfies. The Perfies Award Show for different categories, and I think we might leverage the survey engine and maybe take some people's input on the different Perfies. So this
like
is gonna,
let them vote for categories or let them vote for
categories. Yeah, I have to go back through and get a list of everyone who's been on the News of the Dam multiple times. I mean, there's a whole new category on airlines or travel sites, and you know, then there's individuals who their prowess or their clout actually brought down the site. So
how about like vote for your favorite episode of the year?
Maybe we'll do that. We can see the stats. We can look online, but you know, it's not necessarily qualitative. That's just a quantitative thing, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if we have you, the listening audience, tell us what your favorite episode of the year was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had many people tell me that their favorite episode was actually the one we did on CDN.
CDN is actually rising.
I'm hearing bots, yeah,
only because of the Thompson's twins reference, and the singing on that episode was rather good. the other thing is
the bots theater was really good on that too,
no, it was good. Yes. Tom Servo. The other thing was it's Black Friday today that we're recording. So even though you're not going to quite get this shout out, you know, there's some people between now and even the end of the year that are probably either crying or you need some sort of urgent help. We'll post something maybe today on the Twitter feed. In fact, why don't we could do that right now? We could post it out there. If people are in need of urgent assistance, you know, people should know you can always give us a shout either on Twitter or Facebook. Drop us a note. Our different contact information is available on the website as well. Send an email to ask@perfbytes.com or info@perfbytes.com. Anytime you're stuck in a situation, you need some advice, you can reach out to us. And the last one James wanted to share with everyone was a quick announcement from our great satirical periodical, The Onion, which has posted, I think, a quick announcement regarding Black Friday. What was their headline?
So, Mark, just as we follow Black Friday, so does The Onion. They're very concerned about how, you know, performance and sales and stuff like this. And The Onion says it's been a record year.
Yes.
42 million dead and bloodiest Black Friday weekend on record.
Yeah.
Oh, no. A lot of stampeding at some of those retailers, huh?
I saw it both at Best Buy and Target. They both had barricades, and the cops were there last night, even on Thursday night. So I was like, good Lord. I mean, people are seriously going to get injured. And of course, leave it to The Onion not to embellish the truth in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you just be sending in?
This might explain some of the lack of fallovers we've seen on the internet. You know, that retailers have been successful in pushing everyone to their physical stores, but now they're going to have to bring in the heavy equipment to remove the bodies.
It's a brutal death. That's terrible.
Well, you know, there was a strategy with some retailers that because they just couldn't seem to get their act together with their website, they were going to incent more people to go to the brick and mortar than to buy off the website.
Yeah.
Exactly. And maybe it worked in this case.
Exactly. But let us continue with our episode today on the performance of things, this Internet of Things. Now, I spent a little bit of time researching, and I hear IoT, everyone throw IoT, IoT. You want to be cool? The cool kids talking about technology things, get IoT. I'm an entrepreneur, James, and I'm going to pitch to you that we're an IoT, cloud-based mobile IoT solution, and here's my PowerPoint deck with three slides, and give me $1 million.
I'd like to tell you about the Internet of Things I have in my own house right now. They're called DVD players, printers.
Toasters.
Roku.
Mobile device.
Refrigerators.
Refrigerators.
They're all programmable now.
Your phone.
Yeah.
Yes. Your phone. The oven.
My TV. Oven.
Yeah.
Television, smart televisions.
Yes.
If I wasn't behind my own dynamic IP addressing, DHCP, I might actually run out of IP addresses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that claim IoT, the Internet of Things, is the next bubble. It's the next paradigm shift, like the cloud was a paradigm shift. Do you guys remember the Larry Ellison video where Larry's like, yeah, well, there's this cloud stuff. The cloud isn't real. It's just called the internet. We've been doing the internet thing forever.
Yeah.
Well, so now we've given up the cloud as a complete abstract thing because the cloud is well-baked. They had some principles that were, you know, on demand, always on. It's meterable, right? I mean, there were parts of the cloud that really were different than the old way of doing business with technology on-premise in your data center, especially from an accounting perspective, moving things from a capital expense to an operational expense. That was huge. But the Internet of Things seems to me that it's been all about the consumer space. Like James, as you point out, it's the gadgets. And we did do an episode on gadget performance, which went into, like you say, it's like your wearables, your Google Glasses, your devices and such.
But things are different than gadgets.
Things are different than gadgets, right?
Yes. But just keep that in mind. Things are different than gadgets. We'll talk about that later on in the show.
So in my research, I started to ask the question, what goes beyond the consumer space? And so I went to some
but
of
just
our famous
keep that in mind. Things
like
are different
Dell
than gadgets. We'll talk
and IBM and Microsoft. And they all have, as you guys can imagine, trendy marketing taglines like...
No, I can't imagine that.
Oh, yes. Okay. Dell says this, make the Internet of Things real today.
Wow. But do they explain what a thing is or they just feel like using the word?
No, they're just throwing it out there because they don't know what it is, right? But they did have all of the necessary categorization. They on their page, you can go for the Internet of Things for infrastructure, analytics, security, services, and industries. And the minute I read that, I actually thought to myself, these guys see that there's a lot more from a business perspective to the Internet of Things than the consumer may realize, which is a cardinal sin in the product management world. Like, you're selling software for supply chain, back office, all these other things, logistics, you name it, right?
Yeah.
You don't sell Internet of Things is hip and trendy and cool and everyone should know about it. Boy, this is technology for technology's sake. You don't sell to your grandmother who gets a new Roku device on what the Internet of Things are, Grandma.
So right now at this point in time, I don't see things as much as a B. Well, I think the management of things is more B2B than B2C at this point in time.
Yeah. Look, and look at IBM's page. IBM's page says, create value faster with IBM Internet of Things solution. So first of all, I'd ask the question, tell me what the problem is. Because if IBM has a solution, you know they probably thought through the problem.
Well, I do know what the problem. I think when you're talking about things, in a lot of cases, the problem is to be proactive to prevent incidents that happen
to your things.
Well, not only that, but you're looking at embedded systems, and IBM has been selling embedded systems forever.
Forever, yeah. So when they say an Internet of Things, it should say create value faster with IBM's huge history of experience with embedded systems things.
Yeah, think of embedded system things.
So IBM goes in and says these words, right? They have the word platform, assets, facilities, engineering, electronics, and automotive. And then I thought, okay, so now this things even goes beyond IBM's world. It's getting into electronics as an area, not computing systems, but I mean IBM doesn't have DVD players or high-end audio systems or whatever, but okay, maybe the componentry and such and the networking components in all of that are there in the electronics world. The automotive world, okay, I think Microsoft is probably big. Apple is probably big. Well, who's the other major vendor? Is Android, Google doing stuff in the automotive world? I think they are. Right?
No, it's really more of an embedded Linux platform.
Yeah.
There's some Android there.
Right.
There's some Microsoft.
Yeah.
And I think probably when we look at what Microsoft says, Microsoft is going to say, the Internet of Things is here, and Microsoft Windows 10 is going to be on all of it.
What's funny is I went to Microsoft's website, and you know what they say about it, James?
What do they say?
They say
Windows 10 is ready for it.
No. What they actually say is create the Internet of your things.
Oh, so it's nice and personal and fuzzy.
Exactly.
So home network all your things in your house.
But it's like they're really selling this idea that a consumer, the individual in today's society, should be aware of the Internet of my things. And they say, the Internet of Things starts with your things, the things that matter most to your business.
Yeah, I don't get it because I actually work for a company. This spring I had the opportunity to work with the company who's, you know, building the software to manage things.
Things, yes. Yeah.
And what I saw from that, I'm personally struggling to figure out why you'd connect all these things in your house to each other unless they're that. Well, I guess maybe not. Who knows?
Well, I think they've run out of ways to actually innovate a thing unto itself. So now they have to innovate in a social democracy kind of way.
Like, I don't know. So what's it going to mean? If I turn these three lights on, am I going to automatically turn my TV off?
Well, maybe you can program a code. You turn this light on 3 times and that light off 4 times, then turn the VCR on, then turn the TV on, and a secret door opens up, and then you can get into the back office.
Well, you know, if you wanted to make the thing useful, how about you embed it in all my light switches so it will learn my patterns and then be able to derive off of them when I leave the house and I'm out of town. So I don't have to like program lights to go on and off.
Yeah.
It knows my approximate pattern and it can vary and do things interesting within that pattern.
It makes sense. Dell was the only one that mentioned analytics, and I think you're on to maybe the same thing there, James, which is if you can, if the internet is in all my things, gather data about how I use my things and then give me some advice about how to better use my things.
I want to understand how to better use turning my light switch on and off.
But I mean, you could energy consumption, that costs money. That's fine for a consumer. If you're in a business, if you're in a business and you start analyzing light switches, I mean, you could save a lot of money, especially if it's a large facility, right?
Well, they're already doing that now. You already have light timers that just shut the bloody lights off at 6 p.m. And then if you like go do your motion sensor, it may turn it on if you're back in the room.
So if it sounds like I'm a little cynical,
I don't get it because I actually work for a company.
It's cool to bring the internet into stuff. It's cool to gather the big data, building software to manage things. Do something helpful if you're going to start sticking the internet on all of these devices. Do something helpful.
I am personally struggling to figure out.
Go ahead, Howard.
I'm not as cynical about it, Mark, because once we get into the difference between gadgets and things, I think from a business perspective, there are a lot of use of these quote unquote things, as long as the things are, I don't want to say useful, but you know, as long me as a business, if I'm monitoring one of these things, you know, if you're monitoring it properly, you can like do advanced supply. You can like prevent running out of stock on a particular item if you're managing your thing right.
Howard, in my case, a new water filter just shows up.
Yeah. That's the cool thing. And I remember conversations like this way back in like 1994 when IPv6 came out. And that was like the cool thing. It was like not a thing, but it was a cool idea that it was you could have your toaster and your TV and your and everything can actually request and do requisitions and stuff. But the truth is, out on the internet, some of my other research here was there is something called the Internet of Things Council. And these guys are way ahead of it. They're in Europe somewhere, internetofthings.eu. The IoT Council is a think tank for the Internet of Things. And I thought to myself, why not ask them for more information? So listed on their website, they state out the purpose of the council is to follow and forecast what will happen when smart objects surround us in homes, in smart homes, smart offices, streets, and cities.
What happens if the things rebel on you?
See, I know what's going to happen.
What's going to happen?
It's going to microwave us for all the Wi-Fi radiation.
Skynet. Skynet's going to happen.
Oh, I was kind of thinking more of that movie. Oh, God, I can't remember the name of it now. It was a Stephen King book. It took place in South Carolina. Emilio Estevez starred in it. What the hell is the name of that book, that movie?
What?
What?
Maximum Overdrive.
So you have to bring that up in another second.
Overdrive.
So as you guys can tell, there's
Maximum
no
Overdrive.
Unlike the cloud, right? So in the last 10 years,
Maximum
it's been cloud.
Overdrive.
This paradigm shift in the industry on the
Maximum
idea that the cloud
overdrive.
Would make performance obviously magically wouldn't matter. It's instantly scalable. It's elastic. It does, and all the early performance messaging of the cloud was, you know, had performance benefits sort of baked into the early visions, even though it didn't mean any of them were built in. You had to actually pay for it or you had to do it. And their load balancing still really sucks in the cloud. So anyway, the Internet of Things as a paradigm shift doesn't mention anything about performance. It's completely assumed that all of your devices and everything will work fine. Everyone has enough bandwidth. Everyone has enough the right configuration. Everyone's using sockets efficiently and IP addresses. And we'll get into the details of that, but it doesn't seem like there's no, and I haven't found anyone really talking about performance from an Internet of Things perspective. So that's what we're going to do in the next two parts of the show. James, we want to help a few people not be confused. As you and I were chatting earlier, there is a thing, and thing, don't be confused about the Internet of Things, because I'm not sure if from the Addams Family, there was the hand was thing, the hand. I wonder if Thing has an internet connection now.
Thank you.
Ooh. Well, you know, maybe we should take a look at the latest generation of Addams Family films to see if any of the boxes that the Thing comes out of actually have a Cat 5 connection.
Have a Cat 5 connect. Could be Wi-Fi.
I don't know if they will, though, because I think those Addams Family movies were actually a good 15, 20 years ago now.
Could be early Token Ring.
Well, that's why I said Cat 5.
Could be Cat 5. Also, at the same time,
I got like that pasta thing. The thing like pops out of every box in the ring all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. And Thing would pick up the phone for you. It was very nice. The Thing was awesome.
You get the mail.
Yeah. At the same time, John Carpenter had a movie called The Thing that we just talked about. There's the 1982 version, which with Kurt Russell, that I like the best. It was the scariest.
But then James is talking about the 50s version.
There was a 1951 version, and there was a recent one from the last couple of years, a remake I think, yep. straight up remake. So don't be confused about that. And of course, as you pointed out, Howard, the Maximum Overdrive movie.
That was the revolution. That was sort of the, that was the revolt of the things.
Yes. The revolt of the things.
Yes.
Which is very, very good. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about, we're going to dig into what's the difference between a gadget and a thing. We'll talk about architecture. We'll talk about if you're implementing things and the internet of things in your business. But first of all, take a little message from LightSquare. Does that sound all right, guys?
Yeah, sure.
LightSquare.com is a proud sponsor of Perf Bytes. LightSquare is a unique offering for performance tuning as a service for web architectures. LightSquare delivers tuning recommendations in under 72 hours without the typical investment in tools, license fees, or consultants, where we do the work up front.
That was the revolution. LightSquare,
you only pay based upon the level of improvement.
That was the revolt.
Find out more about LightSquare's unique pricing model at LITESquare.com/pricing.
Do you get a lightsaber with that? That because a lightsaber could be a thing.
Is it, was it lightsaber, L-I-T-E, saber?
I don't know.
No, it was L-I-G-H-T.
G-H-T, saber. Come on. It was actual photons, man.
Yeah. I know, but I just figured it's very seasonal with the Star Wars movie coming out. And
that's very, very
do you get a lightsaber with?
All right, so as we jump into the architecture of things, James, you threw out here, and Howard's ready to chomp on it as well, is we did the gadget performance of consumer yes. gadgets. How are we? How would we advise people? What's the difference between a thing and a gadget?
Well, the primary difference architecturally between a thing and a gadget is a thing is connected all the time. So this can be your Nest thermostat. It could be a printer that's online all the time. It could be your yep. Roku device. It could be a Coke machine that phones home when inventory gets a certain.
Or Dr. Pepper. Could be a Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Yeah, Pepper Dr. machine. Pepper. Could be a. Could be an intelligent coffee maker, could be a VCR that sets its own clock, any number of things. But the line in the sand, so to speak, is it turned on and connected 24/7?
Yeah.
Whereas a gadget generally needs to be either synchronized
yeah.
or proxied through another device.
Okay.
So if I have a smart watch, generally it syncs with my smartphone, and the smartphone is the connection to the internet. Right. Or a Nike Fuel Band or a Fitbit or something of that nature. They're all kind of decoupled and they sync on occasion.
Right.
Or heck, even like, oh, I don't know, now that I've become an iSheep and I have my iPhone and my iPad, they yeah. seem to be talking to each other because they're all in my Apple account.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed when I have my iPhone do the sync over Wi-Fi thing, I'll be sitting here on my laptop, and all of a sudden I notice iTunes pops up and says, oh, your phone is syncing by itself on its own brain. But it's just 24/7 the thing is on doing its stuff. And like you mentioned, a proxy connection to be different than an actual proxy, right, James, from a network could be an actual proxy configuration like through NAT or through SQUID or something. But we're not talking proxy. You just mean there is another app running somewhere else that
yes.
that you're slaved to or you're synchronized to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Your gadget generally doesn't talk directly to the internet. It talks yep. through another piece of software or another device.
Yep, yep. Now, things and gadgets are similar partially because they usually don't have a significant user interface. Now, granted, a phone or a tablet may have that, but like if you're talking about your coffee machine or even like an old Roku has its user interface through the visual part of the on-screen HDMI display.
Yep.
But really, as a gadget on itself, like a Fitbit, has almost no user interface whatsoever.
Until but yet it does.
It does. It does. But you, it is a user interface.
You have to. It's definitely something that's programmable, right?
Yeah.
You can set up certain parameters on your gadget. Whereas a thing, I did some work for this company that had things. And we'll talk about testing against things. But things to me were pretty unintelligent. Machines that in the thing was just communicating information to whomever who is monitoring that particular thing to give it some information about the thing, like I'm almost out of Pepsi, bring some more, or right. I need another Milky Way, or hey, we just lost a couple of lights.
Yeah, download a coffee recipe or reset the clock. These are very simple messages. And I think,
yeah,
James, to your point, as you're right here, you're using some kind of message protocol, either SOAP or REST-based type of messaging for simple messages. But the things in the internet, things and gadgets, as things get more complex, that's one of the performance concerns that I think is out there, is that both gadgets or things, as they get more complex, those payloads and those messaging and the frequency of that messaging gets larger. The payloads get larger, get more complex, and it takes more time to process those messages on either end of the equation.
So let's think about this from a Internet of Things perspective. If I have a sensor that's, say, collecting temperature and humidity, mm-hmm. we have a very limited amount of information that is ever going to be passed by and things of that nature.
Sure, like in a warehouse. If you're in a warehouse or an inventory something.
It's really not going to grow. If we have a coffee machine, the sophistication of your coffee machine is likely not to grow as a device.
Well, maybe you get like gourmet, you can download gourmet recipes and it alters the mechanism a little bit to make the slightly different coffee grounds, like, you know.
But why was what are you communicating back with that? I mean, it's just going to make that stuff's all stored on the locally. You think you're going to go over the internet to get those instructions?
Oh, but the caramel macchiato cafe au lait latte recipe isn't supported by firmware update 1.6. Do you want to upgrade the firmware of your coffee to support the new messaging?
And do you really want to have people upgrading their firmware before they make their
coffee? I may not take the risk. Coffee is very habitual. You know, it's like I like my coffee the way it is. You set it once, but other people, let's say you have guests over the night before, let's have some fancy French coffee. Oh, do you have version firmware 6, whatever? You need the blah, blah, blah. And suddenly the complexity makes something that from a consumer perspective is more choice, more freedom, more features, things that the business, especially product owners in the consumer space, are pushing for, not necessarily more complexity, but they're pushing for these features. And that translates into thing or gadget complexity. That's kind of the one angle I was thinking.
Now I think where we will see an increase in complexity is maybe not in the functional devices.
Yeah.
Like the coffee maker or the refrigerator, but in places like your thermostat,
yeah,
where you get a upgrade and the upgrade now allows you to tell the difference between the outside temperature and the inside temperature, and if I'm heating or cooling, and I can take a beneficial temperature difference between the outside and the inside without actually turning on heating or cooling, it just open up a duct and bring in fresh air.
Yeah. Yeah, a sensor for outside, yeah.
Yeah, then that's actually an improvement in functionality and an increase in message complexity and things of that nature.
I wonder about...
And if I'm just looking from a simplistic point of view, more stuff that can go wrong in your house.
Yeah, it isn't that nice?
You
could just open a window. That's not a bad idea.
So, yeah, you say, wow, it seems pretty warm in the... Don't they have things called thermostats that just detect that inside the house and turn the heater or conditioner on anyway?
Yeah. If you don't have air, I don't have air conditioning.
Well, if you were to have air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. But the idea also in a commercial space, like as we see businesses get quote unquote smarter and smarter things, or we're saying Internet of things are smarter than gadgets, potentially gadgets could, I don't know, it's all going to get confusing. But the idea being, if you're, let's say you have, you know, right now my phone can only talk to very limited things, but it starts tracking mobility, geo-correlated behaviors. Like if I'm walking into a store and suddenly, you remember Minority Report where Tom Cruise walks in and he's got the other guy's eyeballs on, and the automated advertisement as he walks into the store. Oh, hello, Mr. What's his name? Whatever.
They already kind of have that thing out there right now. My wife has an app on her phone. She gets points when she walks into a certain store.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, that's part of the Internet of Things. The crossover into the mobility space, or even RF tagging, which has been around in supply chain and logistics, you know, boxes and all sorts of stuff that are pre-programmed. That's all really sophisticated, interesting stuff that I think is really the is benefiting businesses, where consumers are maybe only loosely enjoying the feature sets that are actually more entertaining or cost effective, like a thermostat. Anyway, James, you were pointing out a couple of things about different commingling, I think is the word you used.
Yes. You don't want to commingle your organic computer and your Silicon Thing computer websites, because if one load gets out of balance to the other, you don't want your entire enterprise impacted.
So don't you? So do some traffic segmentation between, like we've talked about with mobile before, but maybe your all the web services that are supporting gadgets and things use maybe even physically separated or even just data wise separated from human interactive. So like the Roku metadata goes through an Internet of Things web service set with analytics and everything on that, separate from the actual user interface that I'm going through in my Roku, which could and be just partially static.
Or the actual Roku website where you register your Roku and you manage your account and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Totally different than the site that actually pushes updates, provides availability information on different streaming services, things of that nature.
Yeah. And it would be simple enough because if I recall from my visit back in May, they were just using REST calls anyways to do everything. That's how the things were communicating, was all via REST call.
Yeah. So on the back end, it's easy to separate, especially in a microservices strategy. You can scale out and segment that traffic easily. So I think that's a right architecturally a really good point off of that. If you're in the web, if you're not really healthy in the web services world, I can't think of anyone that is implementing gadgets with full web capabilities. They're not hybrid apps on these things. They're almost all API.
Yes.
Yeah. So one question I think you put, James, out there is just if there is a end user behavior that you want to monitor, like you would with Web Trends or Google Analytics or Omniture, so Adobe, you know, I think it is. If you want to actually monitor that end user behavior for marketing purposes, or even I guess for performance perspective, if the user interaction is less interactive, to be honest, if it's less about me reading the UI of the screen or doing something, how many minutes did I sit on the page? How many words did I read before I clicked? If you're really trying to look at the human interaction with your gadgets, you have to look, you start to have to making some leaps with the analytics, because you're just looking at API breadcrumbs from this behavior, not necessarily the full rich end user instrumentation that we've been.
Well, not only that, but if you're if you are Norelco, I guess Norelco makes Mr. Coffee.
Yes.
Are you going to be willing for your embedded firmware to sign up with Adobe for Omniture for the next 20 years of the life of that device?
Yeah. and that gets to the other part of the Internet of Things we were talking about, is how do you update the firmware on your things? And do you need to? And is it easy?
Or do you need to look at a different strategy for how you monitor?
I can't see how you wouldn't have be pushing updates out. Software is always improving.
Yeah. So you almost all of the gadgets, I think, now have some way through either some kind of admin console. I mean, if the thing has an IP address, you can roll a little Nginx website or a Minified website to actually do that firmware. I have Wi-Fi access points in my house that is run a little Linux kernel, and you get on it, SSH, do an update. Build an app on your phone that goes and updates that. The Harmony remote that I use from Logitech, you know, for the for the combined remote thing. It has, when I open it up on my iPhone, boom, it says, oh, by the way, you can update this. And there's no UI on the thing. It just does it.
Well, just think of your things are all going to have to be managed at one central point, right? Yep. So you can just push up, just multi-broadcast updates out there.
Yeah. To me, I think this, compared to the usual traffic from a thing in the Internet of Things, updates are probably the largest payload that's getting sent. And that's probably where you get maybe the biggest complaints is firmware failure, update failure, it's not working, I can't use the latest feature because I don't have the latest update. I'm guessing that may be one of the biggest areas for performance problems is on firmware updates. If that's an essential part of feature updates and usability, you know, if you, like you say, Norelco, if you leave the coffee machine alone, it'll still make the same coffee, even if it's disconnected from the Internet of Things, right?
You would hope so.
Yeah.
But for those payloads, now you're getting into, is everything synchronized to make the same request all at once at midnight to check in?
Oh, there you go.
Is it going to randomly pick a time of the day to dial home and check? Where are you going to stage those updates? Is it all going to come back to one server? Or are you going to push it out to
a CDN?
A CDN type instance, which would be preferred.
So what's that? Everyone going to have a link to Akamai in their house?
Well, maybe you build it in.
Well, that's on DNS, you know. So it's, you know, load updates mydevice.com, and that just points to an optimized instance.
Yep.
I'm just a little skeptical on the consumer piece. I mean, I have seen the commercial. I saw a commercial recently where they had, like, I don't know, the kids leave the house and they go up to the cabin, and dad goes on his iPad and turns all the lights off and locks the door and things like that. But
yeah, turns off the water faucet.
So I'm kind of wondering.
The dog.
I'm kind of wondering how they turned off the water, from their computer.
Well, you can get a relay thing that'll actually turn off the water in the whole house. But you might not want to do that to the whole
house. Especially if you have forced hot water heating your house and it's the winter time.
Yeah, not a good idea. Where'd you install that thing? So the real point, really, from the architecture of the Internet of Things, is there, it's going to be, everything has an IP address of some sort. Everything is updatable, we think. That'll probably be a good prediction. And performance-wise, if you have functionality in the coffee maker where the basic functioning of the device is suddenly dependent on a remote call, like I want to go through step 1, 2, 3, 4 of the logic, but I have to check to see if the firmware is updated with the remote site in the middle of step 5 before I make your coffee. If you are a developer and you're developing this logic sequence, you do not want to have synchronous, forced remote calls, because as much as you might assume in the internet hype that the internet is 100% always available, just like electricity, guess what? Electricity goes out. How long have we had electricity? More than 100 years?
Yeah, imagine if you're using one of those coffee makers that have the little cup things in and they're barcoded, and you put a different one in and it's like, oh, I don't know that. I have to go out to the internet to figure out how to make this.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, someone is sitting there pounding the counter
waiting for their coffee.
Yeah. So there's some assumptions you might make in your logic that show up as a latency problem or a performance response time problem. Because you've coded all sorts of remote calls to, oh, I'm going to look in my local subnet and start searching around for other devices so that I can cross-sell you on, did you know that if you get your Nest thermostat to talk to your coffee maker, when it starts to get cold, we'll automatically make you a cup of coffee to warm you up. And then, you know, blah, 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 there's some interconnected things.
Is this what we're coming to as a society?
This is Skynet, man. It's happening.
Man, not in this house.
Skynet in your coffee maker. That's where it starts.
Not me.
Oh, do you want the new arsenic-infused coffee?
Yeah. See? Maximum Overdrive, I'm telling you. You know what my favorite scene of that movie was, actually? When the soda machine started firing Coke cans out and hitting people and knocking them out.
Yeah, no, that's because who thought that a Coke machine would be a weapon like that?
Exactly. And then they had like one with an electric knife creeping up on the owner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've probably solved the issues that were classic gadget performance issues, like underpowered processors and limited memory, because we're seeing, you know, even gadgets that are almost minuscule have the ARM processors or all of the low power, low voltage kind of stuff is really interesting.
Even the latest Raspberry Pi at $5 is fully capable of running a device of some nature from a logic perspective.
Yeah. So, James, I think in your perspective on the architectural standpoint, this is going to be logic that somebody screws up in how the steps are executed to achieve some function. that people are going to start assuming, oh, I can make these calls to these other devices really fast and everything's always perfect and wonderful in this interconnected way. I mean, we have struggles right now as an industry getting microservices implemented without incredible interdependencies that stop things, you know, like crazy.
I'm stuck on this. So in your home, what's going to be so performance critical that you're going to have to worry about it with your personal things?
Well, you brought up one earlier, Howard, which is like heating and cooling, right?
So yeah, thermostat. So like I said, I set the thermostat. It does what it needs to do.
Yeah,
I don't need it to be tied into a central processor. I just need to know that when the house gets to 68 degrees, the heat turns on.
Yeah, and you know that, Howard. But what about the young developer out of school that just makes an assumption because they were raised in the Internet of Things world that Nest can make a call here and a call there, and it will always work 100% of the time, and they don't code any exception timeout logic to handle all of a sudden Nest is disconnected. And I'm not picking on Nest right now. I'm just saying, you know, a thermostat function has a bug, you know. So if we start putting software in everything, we all know software bugs will end up in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want it in an HVAC system. And I don't want to find out, 2 years after I, bought the system and I'm committed to it and I'm dependent on it, that suddenly they pushed an update that has a bug in it. Next thing you know, maybe everyone that has that thermostat, maybe there's 100 people in my neighborhood that all lost power and then on a restart, it completely screwed up. And the next thing you know, all of our pipes froze. Maybe we should become plumbers.
Can I pose another question, theoretical question then?
Yes.
When is technology good enough?
It's never good enough.
Oh, no, I don't believe that.
All right.
It's like building a better mousetrap.
Yes. And this is the gotchas, I think, from a performance standpoint, is that, we use a thermostat today that has no dependency externally whatsoever. So all the classic latencies, all the classic software bug issues, boy, you know, there'll be future generations 100 years from now that are like, what do you mean a thermostat doesn't have an internet connection? That's insane. We're totally dependent on it. Guys, we're going to take a quick break for a public service announcement.
You know them. You see them hit the end of an iteration and they just plain ran out of time for performance testing. You hear them convincing the VP of development to just fire all the testers. You see some other kids aren't testing at all. And you see the cool kids, well, you know, they're testing in prod. It can be tough under all that peer pressure just because you want to be cool too. But being cool isn't as important as it seems. Perf Bytes encourages you to keep your own commitment to quality steadfast and not give in to those trendy, cool hipsters who don't know how to test and who, by the way, don't pay for what happens in prod. Stand your ground against emergency promotions and too fast releases directly to production without any testing whatsoever. Know that Perf Bytes supports you because friends don't let friends deploy without testing.
Does it make you tear up just a little bit?
It does. Yeah, I picture that that server running headlong into that wall at 110 miles an hour, and
being chased by things.
Yeah.
It just makes me tear up.
Chased by mobile things.
Yeah. All things.
Right. So if you happen to be a developer engineer, or better yet, a testing engineer, in the midst of the Internet of Things craze at your company, and you're developing one of these things that's going to be connected to the Internet, Howard, how are we going to test all these things?
Well, we're going to need one heck of a testing tool that can provide us with a lot of virtual users, because each thing, if we put things into perspective today and how we test and what our paradigm of testing is today, each thing will be basically considered a virtual user.
Yeah.
So if if you're a consumer, if you're business to business and your company is managing a million things, How are you going to test that? You're going to need a million virtual users.
Yeah.
Or in the case where it's RESTful and we don't really maintain a connection or state, it can get simpler because then we're looking at frequency of web services calls. So it can be simpler. The profiling challenge, I think, is a little bit more complex because you don't have the web trends, the Omniture. You may not even have impulse data because the dial home sophistication may not be in the device. So you've got to go to your logs to actually pull that data.
I think there's a lot of pressure also to exploit the discrete interdependence of things that makes the sales and marketing angle and the feature angle go and grow, right? If this is really going to grow like a bubble and take off, the Internet of Things, that interconnectivity, thing to thing, that's T2T. I'm going to coin that right now, T2T.
T2T.
That's what's going to be huge. And to me, from a testing perspective, especially large-scale traffic, you have data correlation insanity. So all of our major testing tools, which is good, they finally, I think HP guys finally brought in VTS. Sosta has the shared data across scripts capability. You can also do this yourself, throw it in ActiveMQ or in RabbitMQ or something like that. But the idea of sharing data across scripts, location data is probably key, timing data so that you've got gadgets that all know when to show up at different times and do different things. And stuff like that. So I think the data correlation from an overall test strategy, that's also could be more complex than your average, you know, website, you know, shopping experience, back office user kind of stuff.
It is going to be interesting to see what happens because Apple is kind of defining a standard for this thing-to-thing connectivity where they all share data. Is your coffee maker or refrigerator going to share enough data with your Nest thermostat that it's all going to wind up at Google's website and it's like, oh, look, Mark is running low on K-cups. We need to order some for him from the Amazon store. I don't see that level of interdependency coming together. I just don't.
It's like 1984. Big Brother's watching your coffee consumption.
It is Big Brother. But, I mean, you figure there is a precedence right now in the hotel minibar industry where individual little things are on a sensor, and if you move it, it knows that you moved that. So it could probably measure the weight of the non-dairy creamer sitting in my fridge.
Oh, they do, too. That's how they measure. A lot of them are weight-based.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is – I think it could happen. James, it may not be happening now, but my guess is – if it's going to grow, there's going to be, look, as a business on our own, just being Nest, we don't have the one solution for everything. The thing that's going to start making, we're going to see a boom in partnerships. Our device connects to your device and this other device, so we put together a partnership and blah, 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 the consortium of whatever. And then you have this new feature that could only exist across things.
And then your things can spy on each other.
Now, here's an example. The Nest thermostat can communicate to the big ass ceiling fan. Yeah, that is actually the name of the company, and they can synchronize their behavior. So you can, you know, the Nest thermostat can turn on the big ass fan.
Yes.
But if you're not home, can you override it so you're not wasting the electricity of the big ass fan just turning on because the Nest thermostat told it to?
Well, then there's the whole geofencing thing if you're out of the house.
See, then you got another. See, so James, the interdependency is going to come, I think.
You know something? This sounds too damn complex for me to run in my house.
Yeah, it is. But again, if you're testing it, your test scenarios are going to have to change, particularly for performance. Again, if you're working at a company where you're producing a device, a sensor of some sort, a gadget of some sort, you need to be aware that look for two things in performance. One, I think it's the scenario for updating firmware or increased payloads. So as you do more complex things with your thing, then that thing has to trade more data back and forth. It may have
to
store.
We did have to take that into account too, because there are a lot of, it just wasn't, you know, REST calls pushing things back and forth. There were like these, I forget what they call them, but it definitely enhanced the there was some sort of reporting that we had to do too with these things.
Yep.
So it got very complex very fast.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't a simple rest call.
Especially with the fitness gadget stuff, right? You're looking at how do I get my data uploaded, and I have some redundancy. So if the parent device loses the history, I have at least, you know, I got the last 2 days worth or 3 days worth or something. But even at that, Howard, the idea of these payloads changing, it's just somebody comes up with, you know how it happens. The product management says, hey, we got this new feature. You technical guys, we trust you. You're going to come up with the best way to implement this. And they sit there going, well, the current web services and the infrastructure of the code doesn't support that. So we have to rewrite everything. So the product manager says, how long does that take? It takes 9 months. Well, can you do it in the next 3 weeks? Well, and some ingenious guy goes, well, I can Band-Aid this thing calling this thing and such, and then we loop that 400 times in memory and blah, blah, blah. So you could end up with a solution to the problem that sucks up all the memory on the device, that runs slow because it grows. This is the other thing I think that happens with.
And then your coffee maker crashes and you can't get coffee anymore.
That's one scenario. The other scenario is you have some of these things built into supply chain. All of a sudden, you've got bad data spitting out about supply chain running in the back office. You've got inventory that's completely off, whereas a traditional system that maybe has a carbon-based counting measurement kind of thing, that could work pretty well. This is the idea as a performance engineer is, are you writing code that's not just munging together the use of a current set of APIs in some weird way that sucks up all the resources?
But if you do that, Mark, you're actually more likely to do that on the back end because you cannot guarantee that devices will update in the field. So you're back to least common denominator for what version is in the field, you know, as far as how much RAM, what version of your operating system is connecting. And so the most likely scenario is complexity grows on the back end. You may have a stub, which sure looks like a common web services call that it was making before. But on the back end, you're now running these 400 cycles and you're chewing up information.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a really good point, which is also to say, if you do not have a version of your things model, and there's submodels and all sorts of stuff that the capabilities of that device, a good thing as a performance engineer would say, these given updates no longer apply to the early Roku or the early coffee machine.
Yep.
And so, you know, and that's very true. If you tried to take the latest iOS or Android and put it on an old phone, it doesn't work. It's just really slow. So if you're not thinking about sticking within those capacities, which has been, I think, part of really good hardware-based engineering for a very long time, but you might have new software engineer guys that sort of end up in that world and not really thinking about hardware limitations the way good performance people should.
That's why you'd have to pass your hardware ID through to see if you're worthy of the update.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you it's part of your user agent string. You certainly have to pass information about what your version is, firmware, date, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. The other performance part of this, I think, is still you can get caught up in the thing of things. And that is to misunderstand it. As I hear my friends James and Howard also point out, man, this is just, I'm a human being in the middle of all of this. If your target market, if your target consumer, or you're even your business, the way you're running it, sometimes we're in love with this idea that we can give everything an IP address and suddenly we're going to have all this big data and we're going to be able to do all this magic stuff. If you're a consumer, you'll be overwhelmed with the idea that somebody's spying on me. My devices are spying on me and I don't like it. And it may be older generation people.
My cups and saucers are in a conspiracy.
The fork is running away with the spoon. The fork ran away with the spoon? Or the knife?
Knife.
Was it the knife?
Knife.
The dish ran away with the spoon.
What?
It was the dish, Mark.
That's not right. But again, the idea being that there's human beings that maybe are going to spit this out. And if it's going to work, it's got to work fast. And it's got to be almost immediate. Like if I change the thermostat, I don't want to wait 15 minutes for it to go, oh, I think you want me to change the thermostat. It's, you know, it's going to have turn on the fan, turn it on right now.
Well, Mark, you bring up a good point there. There are two performance aspects here. There's one on the front end, which is I expect my device to operate as if it's a non-intelligent device that when I turn it on, I don't have to wait for it to, you know, sing good morning to me and then say, I'm ready for use.
And check with the website and then check with a partner device that's sitting next to it and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, how are you refrigerator? How are you Roku? How are you thermostat? Yeah, I just expect it to work. But there's that. Yeah. And then there's the whole back end infrastructure. How do we monitor it's on the back end where we don't have these traditional business interfaces? Are we going to be compelled to look at deep diagnostic tools all day long? Are we going to look at logs? What are we going to do to look at performance on the back end?
They're out there doing it today, right? I know of companies that are out there making it.
Oh, yeah, that's and I think Howard, you're absolutely right. That's what gives big data its name. Is mm-hmm. that if we haven't already been overwhelmed with crap loads of useless information, this Internet of Things, if it actually takes off, we're going to have more useless information that nobody cares about. And believe me, if I see another Dell or a Microsoft or an IBM try to sell to the outside world, the marketing world, the end consumer world, that the Internet of Things somehow is going to benefit them and big data, I'm like, this is a very small number of people in the back office who really need 40 petabytes worth of information about your thermostat in order to sell a better product.
Yeah.
I'm not buying performance wise. We're going to generate all sorts of logging information. And guess what? That's got to come off of your device and get aggregated somewhere in the back end. So James, I think that's another performance headache just waiting to
happen. Yeah. Now I think there's some pluses there because all these things are based around web technology. True. At least on an incident basis, we can track through the logs using the W3C time taken field for how long each individual call takes. Or we can do the deep diagnostic side of the house, and we can look at, you know, all the way down to the beam level if we need to, for what's going on the back end. But that whole data aggregation piece, someone's going to have to make a decision what's a critical piece of information and what is not, because they're going to need to discard data or it's just going to chew up disk space and disk vendors are going to be very happy.
Yeah, or flash or whatever.
I had to set up a Redshift cluster in AWS and you'll be all set.
I'm just waiting for time travel to happen and then we don't have any more performance problems.
And then, by the way, everyone's going to need a 30-gig pipe in their house so their things can get all the data out to the wherever they're supposed to go.
Yeah, so we're not really known for being a insider tips, Jim Cramer. Isn't it Jim Cramer, the crazy financial guy?
Yeah, he sweats a lot and yells on
exactly.
Television.
Like, we're not giving you insider tips, but I think it's pretty clear from this show. One, you should invest in your cable infrastructure providers because the Internet of Things is going to need more. Invest in disk storage providers of some sort because the big data is going to happen. And you should probably invest in maybe switch your career to become a plumber because the minute your thermostat can't talk to the thing in the big-ass fan – the pipes are going to freeze, and boy, there's no way to get in on that versus being a plumber for $180 an hour.
Hey, you know, plumbers make a lot of freaking money.
Yeah, exactly. And just your
ass, because you know, if you need to, anytime you need to clean up someone else's shit,
you'd have to pay a premium for that.
That's right.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm a performance engineer. Sometimes I'm a performance plumber.
James, any last thoughts on the performance of thingy things?
So we've kind of covered the basis for what is a thing versus what is a gadget, architecture, how it works, some of the challenges on monitoring, how we're going to test it, things and things and such that go along with that. So I think we have covered pretty well this issue of Internet of Things and things you need to look for or be concerned about when addressing the thing universe.
The thing of the things, yes.
This gets very confusing from an adjective perspective.
Yeah, yeah, things are confusing, so to speak. Yeah. Howard, what do you think?
So all things considered. This is where I'm at with things. I think things are going to be huge. Are huge in the B2C. In the B2B. Area, and you know, I think as testers, there are going to be lots of companies out there that are going to be putting servers out there to go talk to these things. And you know, we as an industry need to really understand, and regardless if it's B2C or B2B, we need to understand the impact and how to test these things. And you know, again, going to be some network. I think there's going to be some network profiling going on too, because they're going to have a cacazillion things flying in and out all over, sending data in and all over the place. We are going to have to make sure that our networks can handle it too.
Yeah, yeah. So make sure you have enough, expand your DHCP scopes at home, change the defaults, right? So you got plenty of IPs to go around.
And here's another little thought. Will this finally force IPv6 into play?
Sure it will. The first conversations I had about this same kind of ubiquitous IP addressing, you know, thousands per square foot on the face of the planet was in 1994 when IPv6 was first being spec'd. And it's like, yeah, of course you could. This is going to change. This will make IPv6 out. Other than the fact that IPv4 will just stop working at some point. My tips are definitely along the lines of the thing-to-thing capability. And not just on performance. I think security, I think, is a much more fascinating thing for security. And of course, Dell was the only people that called out security from a thing-to-thing perspective. I think, to be honest, I can predict that there may be an independent controller of all of your things. And I think each individual vendor right now is trying to say, I'm your thermostat Nest and I'm your this, and everyone's sort of individuated and competing that way. Whenever we're in the upswing of a bubble like this, you'll find that everyone individuates in order to compete. When we reach the top, when we start seeing someone come into the market that says, we're the house controller, I think of the Microsoft Home automation system, some of the other iHome kind of stuff that's out there. I think that'll be an indicator that the bubble's kind of come around.
I'm actually kind of hoping the big automation providers like Crestron, that have been doing home automation for years, enter this market and set a standard early.
Yeah.
And we have things like Zigbee for communication between devices, and we have some emerging standards there.
Yep.
Apple has a competing standard. Windows 10 has signed on to the Apple standard for Internet of Things.
Yeah.
But I'm really hoping that this is set by a non-software company with a large history in home automation.
That would be kind of awesome. Well, PerfBytes listeners, once again, we reached the end of an episode where we talked about things over here, things over there, things everywhere, and they all have an explicitly assigned public IPv6 address and a web-based admin console running in NGINX, so you can be thankful for that and go ahead and hack it. Thank you, of course, for listening to the show today. We always appreciate it.
As always, thank you to the lovely Mrs. Chorney, and of course, thanks to our listening audience. Without you, we are just searching for a rainbow, or maybe just searching for a bunch of things. Thanks again, and please tell your friends, colleagues, and things about the show, because remember, this is your show.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do.
Mom, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for reading The Cat in the Hat to me many years ago, where we talked about Thing 1 and Thing 2.
Thing 1 and Thing 2. I will also give a shout-out to the sexy Irish voice of PerfBytes, who's back in the studio painting, which is totally cool. And, of course, a special thanks to our sponsor, Sosa Software, for their support of the show and the greater PerfBytes community. Check them out at www.soasta.com.
And I just want to let everyone know that today's show is powered by caffeine.
Caffeine.
That's caffeine, I say. Do you hear me? Caffeine.
Caffeine.
Do I have to come over there and discuss it with you personally?
All the contents of this PerfBytes episode is 100% copyrighted and protected by Starbucks, Pete's, and Dunkin' Donuts. Not to mention the other sugary beverage companies that provide plenty of caffeine for you. If you even think of infringing upon this copyright on the show, Mark James and I are going to write down 50 cups of coffee each. And we're going to charge you on Juan Valdez's burrow. And that, my friend, is one scary proposition, I tell you.
Yeah, that did it. Yeah,
that got through loud and clear there. For more information about the Perf Bites, visit the show's website at www.perfbites.com or follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, the Facebook. And of course, you can always subscribe and listen to the Perf Bites podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and testingpodcast.com. Just open your favorite listening app and search for Perf Bites and click the subscribe button. Please send us an email with your questions or thoughts at ask@perfbites.com or even leave us a voicemail at 77-LOAD-PERF. That's 775-623-7373.
And Perf Bites listeners, keep those cards, letters, iTunes reviews, email, faxes, notes, and things via a caffeinated burrow coming our way. The Perf Bites listener survey is still up and going, and it will be really important for you to fill it out, especially with the Perfies coming up and up and about. We'd love to have your input on the specific questions about your podcast listening habits and future direction of our Perf Bites, or should I say, your Perf Bites show.
That's surveys.perfbites.com, right, James?
That is correct. That is correct. The Perf Bites show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Bash, and the Ministry of Testing, the Computer Measurement Group, the Workshop on Performance and Reliability, and of course, the Software Test Professionals community of software testers. We hope to see you at the next STPCon conference in April 2016 in Silicon Valley. And by the way, they drink lots of coffee in the valley.
Pete's is from California there, Berkeley.
Yeah, it's very tasty.
Berkeley, very good stuff. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you. Take care of all your things. Get your things in with your things. And we'll see you at the next live event or catch us on the next episode of Perf Bites. See ya.
Later.
Ciao.
Keep your things in order.
Get all your things together.
Everything.
Oh, no. We didn't talk about everything.
That's thing 2.0.
Thing 2.0.
Yeah, that's everything.
Yeah. I like it.